Our next case is 12-1398, Sue Kang Gauthier versus Forrest Gauthier et al. For the appellant, Mr. Grossman.
Your Honor, I'd like to reserve half of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you. This case presents an opportunity for the court to clarify Ohio law with regard to the finality of contempt citations or convictions when there has been the imposition of a penalty, even though there is also the opportunity to purge. The vast majority of the district courts of appeal have long held that such orders are final. And there's a good policy reason, as explained by numerous of these courts, for this. And in fact, even though we're appealing from a decision of the 12th District Court of Appeals, the 12th District Court of Appeals has recently seemingly modified its position in the Hedrick case, recognizing the sound policy decisions behind allowing for an immediate appeal of a contempt citation when there is an imposition of a sentence or a fine and there is a right to purge. And in fact, this court has foreshadowed this result soundly in a recent 2012 decision, and I think it's Lemming versus Demos, where you indicated in that case that when a party has a contempt hearing, has a contempt citation, purge conditions are set, that they may appeal that contempt citation and the purge conditions. And this is a very important part of this. Unless you allow the appeal and the finality of the order from that finding of contempt and the setting of the purge conditions along with the sentence that's imposed, the party doesn't effectively have a right to appeal. If they comply with the purge conditions, then they moot their appeal. They can't challenge this. You, of course, stated in this recent decision in 2012 that they should be permitted to challenge the purge conditions without violating the court's order, not purging, be subject to going to jail or being fined, and then and only then being allowed to appeal. In addition, for parties in my client's position, it's also very important to have that finality rule because there's been a trial, a contempt trial. That contempt trial has involved presentation of evidence. In this case, it was before a magistrate. The magistrate ruled with regard to, in this case, the important question deals with 17 items of personal property, where the magistrate ruled that the appellee had possession of that property, that they had not returned that property, recommended that the property be ordered to be returned. And that was then adopted by the trial court in a decision on December 1, 2010 that the trial court said was final. Now, we're not advocating for any strange or difficult or different rules than apply with normal rules with final decisions. If you want to challenge it on the impossibility question, you may do that. The appellee keeps indicating that somehow our rule of finality, which is the majority rule in Ohio, somehow affects an impossibility defense. It does not at all. But you must remember, what are the factual findings that are determined in the case? Those factual findings, if they've not objected to a magistrate's decision, if they don't appeal from the trial court's decision, those findings are final under Ohio law. That's not a novel proposition. That's a long-held proposition that the civil rules have long recognized.
So what we have in the case, Mr. Grossman, is an order from a trial court for the return of certain property and a purge condition that if the property is returned, then the contempt will be vitiated during a 30-day period or whatever. And you think that's a final appealable order?
Yeah, yes, it is, Your Honor. And in fact, there wasn't.
Assume for the moment that we agree with you, and an appellate court looks at it and said, well, we think that the trial court conditions on setting this a finding of contempt and 30 days to purge is reasonable, and therefore we affirm. And then in 30 days, there's some issue with respect to the return of a motor vehicle or some other property. Is there another appealable order?
They can raise. Well, Your Honor, if, for example, there is subsequent things that happen.
Let's just say that the Court of Appeals, in line with the argument you've raised, has affirmed this order on a finding of contempt and a 30-day period to purge. And that matter goes back then to the trial court, and at the expiration of the period of time for compliance, the trial court does what? Send someone to prison?
No, how did the Court of Appeals get the case? Who appealed
Didn't
it?
You argue to us that we have a final order?
Oh, yes, of course I did.
If we agree with you, then presumably an order could be appealed to an appellate court. Am I right?
True.
Okay, that's how it gets to the Court of Appeals.
Well, I was wondering what was the, but who appealed it? I mean, in our case, Your Honor, we agreed with the decision of the trial court, so we weren't going to appeal it. The other side presumably disagreed with it because there was a finding that the items were in her possession and that she had not returned them. She should have then appealed that. If she disagreed with those findings, she should appeal that question and challenge those findings.
So you're missing the whole point of my question, Mr. Gross, and let me try to direct you.
Okay.
If, in fact, it is a final appealable order,
yes,
and the Court of Appeals undertakes the appeal,
yes,
and affirms the decision of the trial court,
yes,
that there's a finding of contempt,
mm-hmm,
with a 30-day period to purge,
mm-hmm,
and the matter gets back to the trial court, and there is no return of the property, and the court then takes whatever punitive action, whether it's incarceration or some other. Is there then another final appealable order at that point?
No, Your Honor. There wouldn't be another final appealable order
so
unless
we incarcerate someone for presumably not returning an extension cord, as we have in this case.
Well, it was far more
than
that.
Then there's no appeal. Is that what your argument is?
No, I'm not arguing that.
Okay,
what I'm saying,
would there be a right of appeal if someone went to jail for not returning property?
If, Your Honor, they had the right of appeal. The right of appeal was from the original decision. They had presumably, what your hypothetical is saying is they appealed the original decision with regard to the propriety of the purge conditions, and they lost. Then you're saying that they should have another appeal
on
the same conditions?
I'm not saying it. I'm asking you how many final appealable orders there are.
Only one with regard to that question.
So
they shouldn't be allowed to have multiple appeals in the same question.
But you would rather have it be sooner than later.
Exactly. I would rather have it when it occurs to give them an appeal right and to establish the finality of the findings.
But here the point is that the contempt really doesn't take effect, or the potential punitive nature of the contempt doesn't take effect unless the conditions haven't been fulfilled. It's a timing issue, isn't it? In the way the order is stated, that it's a conditional contempt in a sense. And wouldn't it be better for your client to wait to see if the conditions can be met? And it's only if the conditions can't be met that you would want to be appealing the punitive nature of the effect of the order.
And so the appeal would be taken at the end of 30 days?
If the conditions weren't met. Isn't that more beneficial to your client, more protective of the interests?
No, it's not. And the reason for it is, are you then saying that you're subjecting a case that went to a magistrate that they didn't object to, and therefore under Rule 53, if the court adopts that, they're not supposed to be allowed to object to those findings of fact on appeal. That's what the rule says. And then when the court adopts it and they don't appeal there, you're saying that they can go on and relitigate the very same factual matters that were already determined? I mean, that's what happened here.
Presuming here that there was a factual determination by the magistrate as to who owned the property, that it was a subject
right
here, and there was an order to return it within 30 days?
And there was. I've gone up from my time.
Well, we'll keep going here until our questions stop.
Okay. Right.
And the party did not return the goods.
She did not.
And up to that point, did not object to the magistrate's report, did not object to the court affirming the magistrate's report. The 30 days passed. She didn't do what she should have been done.
correct.
At that point, there should have been an imposition of the consequences for the for the contempt. It was a full-fledged contempt of a court order at that point.
Correct.
And the Court of Appeals in this case received it at that point, correct?
No, the Court of Appeals didn't perceive it after 30 days. The Court of Appeals indicated that you don't have a final contempt order that can be appealed until there's an execution of the sentence. She would have to actually be serving the sentence for there to be an appealable order. That's what they said. But what occurred in this case
appeal it to the Court of Appeals? At what point?
They didn't. They never did.
Okay.
We appealed
you
it.
You did at the time of the purge hearing.
We appealed it after the court relitigated the issues.
Well, I think I want to go back to Justice O'Donnell's question. Let's assume we agree with you that there was a final appealable order at the time mm-hmm. that it was originally issued.
Mm-hmm.
But even at the time of the purge hearing, wouldn't there be an opportunity to show impossibility?
Well, sure,
of course. And so wouldn't that give a second right of appeal?
But
isn't that what the Court of Appeals ruled?
Because here's the problem. They didn't present new evidence. They didn't present evidence under Rule 60. They didn't present new evidence subsequent to the contempt citation.
But have you raised that in your propositions of law? As I read your proposition says there was a final appealable order at the time mm-hmm. that the original order was issued. If I agree with you about that, if I look at the Court of Appeals decision, it says we don't think it was final, but even if it was final, there's still this question of impossibility, and that's not part of what we have here, is it?
That is, and here's what the court didn't tell you. Because it's true that impossibility was a new issue, but the facts upon which it's predicated were not new. Our point is that you cannot simply ignore the facts that were determined. In this case, it wasn't that they were presenting new facts or newly discovered evidence or something that was different after the contempt citation came down. They relitigated the very same evidence with the very same witnesses that they already presented. So a question is, why is it that they're permitted? Once we have a final order, I believe, once you have a decision of a magistrate not objected to, adopted by the trial court, finding that she has the items and hasn't returned them, why are they allowed in a purge hearing, which is supposed to be simply on the issue, and you've announced this, simply on the issue of purge, are they allowed to go back and relitigate the very evidence that established the order in the first place of contempt? They just simply reconsidered the evidence. They simply redid it, and they did it in a way that was prejudicial to us. Because in the purge hearing, we didn't present our evidence. We didn't even have the transcript that we provided of the evidence we presented because we won. We won on those factual issues, and we objected, said, why is it that you're doing the very same evidence with the very same witnesses that was presented at the contempt hearings that occurred in September of 2009?
Sounds like a race judicata argument you're making.
And we made that argument in our briefs. We made that before the Court of Appeals. And the Court of Appeals didn't address that because when they talked about impossibility, they didn't talk about what was the impossibility relating to. It isn't that impossibility can't be raised. Of course it can be raised. It's what can be raised in this case.
What if the impossibility wasn't discovered until subsequent to the...
Rule 60 provides for that. It says that if it's newly discovered, they can raise it.
So there can be two appeals.
Well, you can always open up a final judgment with newly discovered evidence that affects a judgment, and then that could lead to a second appeal. That's the rule currently in Ohio. It's just that you have to follow these rules, and they weren't followed in this case because they had a final order. The vast majority of courts agree that this is a final appealable order. There's good policy reasons. You've recognized it recently in 2012. But what's the implication of the order being final? The only implication is that the facts that were determined cannot be challenged unless Rule 60 is followed. That's all we're saying. We're not saying anything different from that. We're applying the normal rules. Your questions apply in every case. Let's say you have a final judgment, and then there's a newly discovered piece of evidence affecting that judgment later. Well, Rule 60 covers that precise situation.
Counsel, I'm looking at your brief and your assignments of error, and you keep referring to Rule 60. Yeah. This is not a Rule 60 case, is it?
Well, our assignment of error on that, we did have a second assignment of error dealing with that type of topic, but you only accepted the one on finality. What we're saying
is... So I say you're confusing me this morning when you start talking about Rule 60.
Well, I'm only...
Are we talking about final appealable orders today?
Yes.
Okay.
But the only reason why I'm talking about it is I've been asked about it. But the other reason is this. It's because what's the effect of the finality? The important thing to the parties in this case is what is the effect of that final order? Now, it's true that you have before you today the question of whether or not a contempt finding coupled with a sentence but with a purge is a final order. That's what you're here to decide. Almost every appellate district in Ohio says that's final. Almost everyone.
You realize I'm from the 11th Appellate District.
I appreciate that, but there are numerous judges on the 11th Circuit that have agreed with the majority position. And so I'm not denigrating anybody. And in fact, the 11th Circuit District Court of Appeals, that majority agrees with the problems with their decision. They just think that they were forced into this position. They've opined that this position is a problem. They've opined that it's difficult on the parties. And that's why the 12th District reversed itself, because they recognized that. I'm only talking about the finality point and its effect in this case, because the court, in fact, decided it wasn't final. And what really happened here was not impossibility. What really happened here was reconsideration when there was a final judgment. I'm saying that was wrong if the finality is correct. Can I reserve time still, or am I not allowed to?
You've used your time.
I've got 1 minute left. Am I allowed to have that?
Actually, you're over your time.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, well, thank you so much.
Mr. Klingler.
Good morning, Chief Justice O'Connor, honorable members of the court. I'm Robert Klingler. I'm here on behalf of the appellee, Sue Kang Gauthier. A trial court must retain jurisdiction to assess the appropriateness of its civil contempt sanctions at all times through full enforcement of the sanction. Because the purpose of civil contempt sanctions is to coerce obedience to a court's order. And once a trial court determines that that goal can no longer be accomplished through the imposition of a sanction, it's the court's obligation and duty to modify or remove the sanction. In this case, the trial court correctly modified and removed the sanction, and the Court of Appeals correctly affirmed that decision. The December 1st, 2010 order was not a final appealable order. This court has determined that generally final appealable orders are orders that resolve all of the issues in the case or some distinct branch of a case.
Counsel, let me ask you, because this is a policy court.
Yes.
And as I mentioned, I used to serve on the 11th District, and we wrestled with this probably weekly. I don't understand the concept when somebody is told by a court, you must do this in 30 days, and if you don't, you're going to jail for another 30 days. And somehow courts in this state have been troubled by, you have to actually be in the jailhouse before you're allowed to ask somebody to review that order. Does that make any sense to you?
It doesn't make sense to me, Your Honor, and I know the courts that have gone against the 11th District's position have always asserted or proposed that dichotomy or that dilemma on behalf of the contemner. I don't quite understand that, and that's not, of course, the position here. We did not appeal the decision because we needed to present new evidence to the court of impossibility, and frankly, contrary to counsel's repeated assertions, there was a lot of new evidence presented at the purge hearing in February of 2011.
And was that the testimony of the sons? Is that what you're talking about?
That was some of the new testimony, Your Honor. There was testimony that a new search had been made from the time of the October 1st order until December 31st. A new thorough search of the property had been made. We're talking about a house, we're talking about outbuildings, basements, sheds that had to be scoured for saw blades, extension cords, and whatnot. A new search had been made. The magistrate heard that testimony. The magistrate heard the testimony of the son and the son-in-law who had participated in those searches and who had delivered items on various occasions to Mr. Gauthier and had been told those are the wrong items. Had taken them back to the home in some instances.
And the items were $2,500 worth of items?
No, Your Honor. The $2,500 was one of the purge requirements that Ms. Gauthier did meet. That was a sanction to cover attorney's fees for the appellant. That was paid. One of the requirements of the purge order was that the parties divide certain additional items that had not yet been divided that were at the home, music CDs, an assortment of wine, framed photographs, a lot of other things that Ms. Gauthier attempted to meet and divide with Mr. Gauthier. He was apparently busy on his yacht in the Caribbean and did not come to divide the items, so the trial court determined at the purge hearing that she had essentially complied with that element of the order. There were two items that were returned, both of which the appellant had known were available for him to pick up at any time, one of which was an extremely heavy Korean box weighing, I believe, over 100 pounds that we had dragged to two hearings, partially as evidence and partially to tender to the appellant that he had not taken. He had said, I don't have any way to take this or any place to put it, so we took them back. That was one of the items that was delivered on December 31st. So two of the 15 items were delivered. The other item that was delivered was a Bureau of Alcohol and Tobacco and Firearms explosives kit of some kind that Mr. Gauthier had obtained when he had a hobby of assembling rockets in years past. That was delivered to him. The saw blades, the extension cords, the other items that were enumerated were not returned because they were not available. The other new evidence, Your Honor, that was adduced at the hearing was Ms. Gauthier testified as to how it came about that she had answered her interrogatory answers the way she had, because you'll recall that was the sole basis of the magistrate's decision. There were over 100 items at issue originally in this case. The magistrate determined that all of them had either been returned or were no longer available. She could not return them, but she focused on interrogatory answers that had been made in exhibit but had never been the subject of testimony at the earlier hearings. And the magistrate, sort of out of the blue, went back and said, well, it looks like you've admitted that you have those items, so I'm going to order that you produce them. That was the entire basis of
Mr.
the order.
Klingler.
Mr. Klingler.
Mr. Grossman argues to us that the testimony at the purge hearing with respect to the thorough search that was undertaken could have been done at the time of the first hearing on the contempt, and that because it wasn't done, you've waived any opportunity to challenge the findings of the magistrate because you didn't appeal.
Well,
what is your response to that argument?
My response, Your Honor, first of all, is that it's not accurate. And I don't see any citation in the record in Mr. Grossman's brief to substantiate his assertion. There was new evidence that could not have been presented. For example, the new search. For example.
Well, the new search, but there could have been an original search, I guess is his point.
And had you
undertaken a thorough search, you may or may not have found the Korean box or the saw blades or the extension cords or whatever these items are that...
And, Your Honor, that my other response to your question is that would be an appropriate question, perhaps, if this were a Rule 60B proceeding. And that would be a finding that the court, I think the lower courts more appropriately would undertake. Is this really new evidence? But... because our position is that it's not a final appealable order, that it cannot be a final appealable order in this case, then the court was free, and I believe in a civil contempt setting, the court has to remain free to assess its order at any time and shouldn't be constrained by strict requirements about could this evidence have actually been presented at the earlier hearing, because things change. And Your Honor, as you know, it's an abuse of discretion standard. The imposition of sanctions is an abuse of discretion standard at the trial court. This court's recognized that ever since 1933 and again in 1981. So the court has the right and the obligation to assess at every opportunity, at every turn, whether the sanction really still makes sense.
When, in your view, did the trial court issue a final appealable order in this matter?
I think the April 20th, I believe it was.
Oh, help me with dates. Now, let's get to the first contempt hearing with the purge conditions, or right. Subsequent to that.
After the trial court affirmed the magistrate's decision as a result of the purge hearing, I believe that was a final appealable order.
So you think that the initial contempt with the 30-day purge condition is an interlocutory order of a trial court?
Exactly. I think it is.
And you await the 30 days to find out whether or not this individual is going to be incarcerated or sanctioned in some other fashion as the court determines. And that becomes the final hearing.
That's my position, Your Honor.
And the argument against that, I suppose, would be you either then have to go to jail in order to appeal, and that sort of deprives you of a remedy.
That's the dilemma. Of course, it's been discussed, and the 11th Circuit, I believe, has suggested that perhaps that a stay could be imposed. I'm sensitive to that issue, and I think there are various ways probably to address it. My concern is simply this, that whether it's an interlocutory or however this court deals with it, the court has to, in my opinion, give the trial court the right to assess at any point before the jail sentence is actually enforced whether or not the purposes of that or a sanction can still be served.
And that's the purge hearing that has to take place
before any incarceration can take place. In fact, in this case, there was no hearing set in the December 1st order. No hearing would have been set if appellant hadn't moved the court with a motion to impose sentence.
Right, but I mean, don't you think that it would have been incumbent upon you to file for a purge hearing to demonstrate impossibility or compliance or a combination thereof? Once that 30 days or during that 30-day period that your client was given to comply with the order?
Frankly, Your Honor, my hope, perhaps naively, was, and I communicated with Mr. Grossman, we've made a thorough search, we have these two items, here's the $2,500, I'm assuming this will take care of the problem. It didn't. And there was...
You thought that was going to solve a case like this?
Your Honor, I...
How long have you been practicing DR work?
I have not been practicing DR work. I'll confess that.
I mean, obviously, this looks like the, you know, your proverbial DR case from you know where. And to think that these parties were going to be satisfied with that. And but, the problem I have with that saying, I thought everything was going to be smoothed over by doing A, B, and C when there was the rest of the alphabet to... comply with, is that we've got to issue an opinion here that is going to be for all cases,
exactly.
Even cases that may be more reasonable than this, or even some that possibly could be less. But let's address what should have happened during the 30 days that your client was given to purge the contempt. In other words, to comply with the order of the court to turn this property over. When it became clear that she couldn't do it, or that the sons put on another search, or whatever, why shouldn't the rule be that if there is the inability to comply, and this new evidence is the additional search, that there should be a request for a purge hearing?
I have no problem with that, Your Honor. That perhaps is a reasonable rule. The 30-day, frankly, we were continuing to gather, look for, and gather evidence up to the last minute. Because of the holidays and some other things, the two items were delivered on December 31st. So whether the hearing should be requested before the 30 days or at some reasonable time after that, I suppose, is an open question. But in this case, there was no reason that the court, because there was no deadline imposed by the court, and perhaps, again, there should have been, that might be a helpful instruction to the lower courts, but there was, the deadline was 30 days, but there was no deadline for presenting yourself to this court or presenting yourself to the county jail if you haven't done it. So
because of the absence of that language in the court's order, that at the close of 30 days, if this purge has not occurred, you will present yourself to the sheriff for confinement. Because that type of language was not in the order, you're regarding this as an interlocutory.
Your Honor, no, because I think even during that 30-day period, even if a specific date had been set, during that 30-day period, the trial court retains jurisdiction to reassess.
Oh, I don't disagree with that. I don't disagree with that, but. You just said because this was kind of an open-ended order that you didn't know what was going to happen at the end of 30 days.
Correct.
But had the order had the trial court said, in the event 30 days and give a date certain passes and the contempt has not been purged, then you will present yourself to the sheriff for.
And then we would have requested a purge hearing. Definitely. We would have requested the purge hearing.
Mr. Klingler, I'd like to look at this in relation to the situation with a magistrate, because I totally understand, we're talking about contempt issues and the court retaining jurisdiction. I understand your position. But now when you have the magistrate having the hearing to begin with and the court then adopting the magistrate's findings of fact, you are not suggesting, are you, that if there's no appeal of those magistrate findings of fact, that any of those issues would be subject to appeal if they were not objected to initially, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so that, I think that because the other side is talking about this issue of finality of the order in its consequence. I think the position of your opponent here is that there should be no evidence adduced later on because you didn't object to the findings of the magistrate to begin with. But as I understand your position, the magistrate's findings were as they were, and they related to a point in time. You did not appeal.
Correct.
But later on, during this interlocutory period of 30 days, you wanted to explain what had happened then. So your position was this was all new evidence that was appropriate before any final appealable order took effect.
That's correct. That's correct.
Mr. Klingler.
Yes.
Let me take this through the whole analysis. You had a final contested divorce hearing, correct?
Correct.
During that hearing, evidence was presented that these 17 items existed and she had those items. There's a decree of divorce that goes on that says these 17 items are awarded to husband and wife has until X date to turn those over to husband, correct?
Correct.
That becomes a final appealable order. So she had the ability to appeal the actual final appealable order in the divorce case. She could have raised at trial that she did not have these 17 items. You could have undergone that discovery at that point in time. But whatever happens in the lack of searching them out, a final judgment order of divorce goes on saying she has these 17 items, she has to turn it over. So the date in the final judgment entry and decree of divorce goes by and she hasn't returned those items. So husband then files a new motion post-decree, a contempt motion against her for failing to provide those. Once again, during that contempt hearing, you would have had the ability to undergo a complete discovery of these 17 items and raise the impossibility of presenting them to husband at the time of the contempt hearing. But that wasn't done, correct? No? Yes or no?
Well,
was that done at the time of the contempt hearing?
Was evidence adduced on those issues?
Correct.
Yes.
So you had in front of the magistrate at the time of the original contempt hearing evidence that she could not comply by finding those 17 items. That's not what happened here, because that was not raised until after the contempt finding was made, and then you were into the 30 days after for a purge. That's when she undertook the discovery process. Did she have those 17 items? Not at final trial, not for the contempt, but at the purge.
She undertook the search, if I'm understanding, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. She undertook the search early on. There was some evidence adduced early on as to all of these items before the magistrate made her final determination.
And we're missing words. So what is your word of final determination? The contempt entry or the purge entry?
The contempt entry.
Okay, go ahead.
So in the contempt entry, as I was saying, the magistrate said, basically, I don't think you've got a lot of these items that were on the list, and I won't get down in the weeds with the details of this mm-hmm. case, but there were long lists of items that Mr. Gauthier had made up. You're correct that the court, that was part of the final decree. But the magistrate said, I'm just gonna decide that you apparently, was her word in the contempt citation, you apparently have these items because you admitted it in your interrogatory responses.
Okay, so she made a finding that at the time of the contempt, she had these remaining 17 items. At that time,
yes.
It isn't until after the purge condition you're looking at going to jail time that then she starts scouring the house for all the items. And that's when you want to raise the impossibility defense at purge.
Let me just correct you to this extent, Your Honor. She had looked for the items, and she had her family members look for the items. Despite that, the magistrate said, it looks like you still have these 17 items. After the citation went...
That was a credibility determination made by the magistrate that she did or didn't have those items at the time of the contempt.
I don't know if it was credibility. It was based on interrogatory answers.
Okay.
It was because I think it was based on interrogatory answers, and that was the first time...
It was her interrogatories, right?
Correct. Yes.
She admitted
yes.
that she had these...
In her interrogatory answers, she did. And, Your Honor, my client...
Wasn't she held to the truth of those answers?
She explained at the purge hearing that she was under medication at the time. She doesn't use computers. She's a 70-year-old North Korean woman who escaped the South and then came to the United States. Her English is not great. She had her son type the answers onto a computer. He would ask her questions, okay, solvent, do you have this special kind of solvent? And she said she knows there's some 5-gallon cans of some kind of paint thinner in the garage, so she said yes.
And when was all that presented? At the purge hearings?
Your Honor, yes, at the purge hearing. And our contention is that the court has to retain the jurisdiction to decide based on everything I know now, does it still make sense to send this lady to jail, or do I decide that it looks like she doesn't have them, she can't comply, and that's what the magistrate decided.
See, that's the trouble that I'm having here. It's the issue of the magistrate making decisions and then having those facts adopted by the court. And what preclusive effect does that have on the later purge hearing?
I understand. And my answer to that, Your Honor, is that I don't believe it can preclude additional evidence, because the appellant keeps saying, you could have appealed. Yes, we could have appealed, but the appellate court would not have had any of the evidence that we adduced at the purge hearing. So we would have been appealing on the record that the magistrate had, where she had said, well, the interrogatory answers show that you have them. We frankly knew that was not true. That wasn't the case, so we had to present new evidence at that point. We couldn't have done that if we had appealed.
And you didn't do that at the contempt hearing. I don't understand why that information was not given to the court at the contempt hearing.
All I can say, Your Honor, is that the contempt hearing was stretched over several months, over 4 or 5 days. There were lots of items discussed.
That's the nature of contempt hearings when you're going piece by piece from saw blades to 5-gallon drums to whatever else you're trying to fight over here. If that's the nature of the beast, you've got to deal with it.
I understand.
And that's when it should have been dealt with.
That's, Your Honor, I understand that. But the point I would make is we now have a factual finding from a magistrate affirmed by the court, by the trial court, and affirmed by the Court of Appeals that she doesn't have these items. She can't comply. I don't see how we can ignore that. And I don't see how we can preclude trial courts in the future from doing whatever they need to do to adduce the truth in a civil contempt setting, because the purpose is to coerce compliance. And the court
isn't it the order, the way the order is written itself, that determines whether the court is retaining jurisdiction or not? I mean, here it is a condition. At the hearing, the court decided that 30 days would be allowed to purge. So when we have that condition, the court is saying there may be things that will avoid the imposition of the penalty. So
absolutely,
the penalty doesn't become final until that 30-day passes.
Absolutely, and there has to be that that curing possibility, or it's not civil contempt anymore, it's criminal contempt. This is a hybrid sort of case. Your Honors have recognized that before. It doesn't fit neatly into a lot of the other civil action rules. But my contention is simply that the court must be able to retain jurisdiction and retain its discretion, which it has, to lift a sanction, especially a jail sanction, if it determines that the purposes of the sanction can no longer be met, and that the court can't lose that jurisdiction by some ruling that, well, it's final appealable, therefore you can't present new evidence, you have to just go to the Court of Appeals.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Grossman, you've used all of your time. We'll give you 30 seconds to...
The evidence wasn't new. All of the evidence on these items were all litigated. They put on evidence as to where they were, when they were. The two witnesses, the third witness, they were all testimony in the contempt proceeding. They took it. The judge had all that, said she had all that. There wasn't anything new. Yes, they re-testified about the same things. The interrogatories were made a part of the evidence. If they wanted to present evidence, they had the opportunity to do so. If you're saying that they can then reopen and relitigate and redo this thing, they can still do it. And the problem is there was a final decision by the magistrate, not objected to. There was a final decision of the judge. And by the way, we all thought it was final. He said it was final. And they didn't appeal. The important question here, though, for you at the start of this is to determine, was that appealable? You've already indicated that it is. And if it's not appealable, then you can't appeal purge conditions. If it's not appealable, you can't appeal the contempt citations. If it's not appealable, you, in effect, are forced to purge and then lose your appellate rights. You're providing appellate rights, but you're also providing the parties on my client's side with finality, where if they find certain facts, and they can raise the impossibility defense, that just has to be new. That wasn't the case here. It wasn't new.
If we agree with you and it is a final order, that's what you want us to find.
Yes.
There can be then yet another appeal by the contemnor if incarceration is imposed. Do you agree?
If they have appealed the question of the propriety of the original order, and you find that that original order is proper.
Oh, I hope we don't get another one of these, Mr. Grossman.
Then, Your Honor, they can have a purge hearing.
Yes.
If that's been found, and if they put on new evidence, not old evidence, not evidence that was already found as final and the Court of Appeals has found as final, but if they put on new evidence, then yes, of course they can do that, just like if they raised a Rule 16.
Well, at the purge hearing, what would you see happening?
Well, you have said this in your opinions. The purge hearing relates to purging. It doesn't relate. It relates to did you comply with the order.
So the purge hearing might say that we return the electrical cord and two saw blades and were unable
to
locate.
Well, that's some of the things, but
we're unable to locate
it also
another
involved,
item. Excuse me.
I'm sorry.
If you listen to the question, then you'd be able to respond to it.
Okay.
And then you would find that some of the other items were not returned at the purge hearing. And then presumably the trial court could impose a sanction, which might involve incarceration. Could that individual then appeal a second time?
He cannot appeal on the basis of what he could have appealed on in the first round. If he says, I did purge, I did provide these things, or he raises an impossibility defense where he raises new evidence, yes, that can provide, if he disagrees with that, with another appeal. Just like if he raises an issue under Rule 60B and says, here's new evidence, newly discovered, that means that I can challenge that judgment. And the court disagrees, he has another appeal right at that point. That's true today in all cases. So if, for example.
Let me ask you a different question and conclude. What is the law in the 12th District today?
The law in the 12th District today is that this order is now appealable.
Okay, and I thought
there
was.
What did you say?
The 12th District today has decided, well, there's the Dudley case after this case came out, the Court of Appeals decided the Dudley case, which decided that this was not an appealable order if you had a purge condition. Then the court decided the Hederick case. Two of the judges were the same. In the Hederick case, the court reversed the Dudley case, which was decided by some other judges on the court, and said, you know, this is a bad policy, bad decision. We're going to follow the majority rule. So then they established that. And then the people in Dudley came back and said, hey, whoa, you guys just reversed this thing. We'd like to have our appellate rights. And they said, you know what? That's true. We're going to give them to you. We were wrong. So they then gave the Dudley people
the
right
to appeal. So the 12th District is in line with the majority as
now
of today.
Is.
And
now
this is a final appealable order in
yes,
the 12th District.
Yes, now it is. But they've acted, as, in our case, it is if it was not. And it goes back from our standpoint. Of course, it's important, I think, for you to follow the majority rule, which
so
is consistent with good policy.
So if Dudley came back, you could go back into court and want to get under Hederick.
Well, the fact is, I don't know whether we're allowed to do that or not, because we did appeal, and we've raised the issues that we've tried to raise. But what we were not the funny thing that happened in this case, and this is where there's a lack of clarity, and a lot of your questions today are related to the fact that there is a lack of clarity with regard to what were the findings of fact. And the Court of Appeals said, well, they found that you had the items and you didn't return them. Well, when could she say or contest the fact that she didn't any longer have them? It would be subsequent to the last date of the contempt hearing, which was in April of 2010. If after that date, she specifically says, okay, I had them, and now I will explain why I no longer had them subsequent to then, she could perhaps establish an impossibility defense, but she'd have to be very specific with that. And that's what the impossibility defense requires, that you specify exactly how the impossibility occurred and when. When you have an order that goes on saying, you have these items, you must return these items, she doesn't object to that, she doesn't appeal from that, those findings are set. Now, if she wants to raise an impossibility defense and say now subsequent to that there's new evidence, she can do that. That didn't occur in this
Thank
case.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
We will take the matter under advisement and you will be notified of our decision. Marshall, will you call a recess, please?
All rise.